How can we test Guru Bhakti? When is the disciple's Guru Bhakti valuable? All the sadhakas are devoted to their beloved deity, Sri Gurudev. There is a wet stone with which you can test Guru Bhakti, which Guru Bhakti is ripe and which is unripe. If you want to test gold, there's a black stone. I think it's a wet stone, And you rub the gold on that, and if it's real gold, it'll come out. You know, a golden line will come off. If it's gold polished, when you rub it, the polish will come off, and then the silver will be underneath. There's, you know, gold plating. Some of those are gold ring. You can't tell by looking at it. But you rub it on the stone, then the gold, the real gold, will just keep making gold line, gold line, gold line. So there's a wet stone with which you can test which Guru Bhakti is ripe and which is unripe. What that is, I told you once before. It is nothing else but the realization of the popular saying, even if my guru goes to a bar, still my guru is directly Lord Nityananda. If a person actually sees with his own eyes how his beloved deity is engaged in some forbidden activity, but this does not destroy his faith and confidence in his guru, or even change it in any way, then his guru bhakti has value. It is said that when banknotes come from abroad, there is no signed mark on any of them yet. Oh yeah, there's some, because at the time this was spoken, 1887, England was running India. So banknotes were printed in England and later signed by the authority to become valid. The value depends on the signature, which ought to be verified to distinguish between a real one and a fake one. A guru is to be accepted on verification, otherwise you may be cheated in the long run. So apparently, when England ran India, they printed all the money with the Queen's picture on it, all that stuff, in England. And then they brought it to India. Then once it was in India, it had to be signed by the treasurer who lived in Calcutta or Delhi or whatever. So he would sign it somehow. So if someone got a hold of that money and just signed it themselves, with the forgery, then they could try to steal that shipment of money. So they have to verify it's the correct signature from the right person to make it actually valuable. That's the analogy it's giving. It is said that when banknotes come from abroad, there is no signed mark on any of them yet. As long as a banknote has no mark printed on it, it has no value. Look very carefully if there is any mark on the note of your Guru Bhakti. Dunk it in an astringent liquid, and if there is no mark in it, then it won't be accepted in the market. Why would the people accept it? If the people don't take your note and you cannot take it to the market, then finally you will realize that you're cheated. So take care beforehand. Anyway, the idea is that Guru Bhakti is very valuable. And we have to try not to lose our faith and confidence in Guru, ever let it change in any way. But a proper Guru will always behave in such a way that from his side there will be no cause for one's faith or confidence to diminish. How will the sadhana of the disciple be harmed when he finds fault in Sri Gurudev? I've told you many times before, I'll tell you again, that when a disciple finds any fault in the guru's behavior, then his sadhana will suffer. As soon as a disciple finds fault in Sri Guru and he starts acting independently, his fall down is certain and he will not even notice it. Your sadhakas and your sadhana truly keeps you on the path of duty. You may know it or not. Only Sri Gurudev maintains your sadhana. It is easily understandable that as soon as you neglect or reject him, or find faults in him, or slight him, or criticize him, you will inevitably fall down from the path as a result of that. And look, every sadhaka has to remember this particularly. Sri Gurudev is no one's beggar. He is not dependent on anyone else but the Lord. If you want to give something to the Gurudev, out of a sense of duty, it must all be given with a service attitude. If not, and the disciple thinks, I have supported my Gurudev, I have done him a great favor by unexpectedly giving him 2 rupees. This was a lot of money in 1887. In 1887, 2 rupees is probably, 50,000 or 100,000 now or something. I have done him a great favor by unexpectedly giving him 60,000 rupees. Then you're finished and your fall down is inevitable. If Sri Gurudev is only dependent on Lord Sri Krishna, then why would he want to withdraw his face from Krishna to look at the face of some human being? or depend on some. In other words, his whole life he's dependent on Krishna, and Krishna's given everything. And all of a sudden, someone comes along out of the blue, after 20 or 30 years, and gives a few rupees. And that person thinks, "Oh, now I control this person. Now this person's dependent on me." That's a great illusion in the mind of the disciple. Because Gurudev has always been dependent on Krishna. Krishna's given him everything. Can he do that? No. He can never do that. You may think that Sri Gurudev is only saying this to his disciple for his own selfish benefit. But there is no reason to think like this. For Gurudev is not depending on his disciples for anything. He's only instructing his disciples in this for their own benefit, out of his grace, to keep them carefully on the path of sadhana. These words are completely true and are to be remembered by the disciple. Can we experience the tangible manifestation of the Lord? And what is His tangible service like? Can we touch the Lord? Can we experience, can we actually see the Lord face to face? Can we touch Him? Can we perceive Him directly with our senses? And what is it like to actually directly serve Him? Qualification both for the tangible manifestation and the tangible service of the Lord is dependent on Krishna's mercy. Krishna is Sachit Ananda. He is Maya. Sachinanda Maya, Maya means filled with. He is filled with existence, awareness, and bliss. And Krishna's realization can only be relished through ecstatic love. There is no other way to perceive His transcendental form with this gross body and its gross senses. And with our, there's no other way to perceive Krishna's transcendental body with our gross body and senses. No other way than what? Than to obtain ecstatic love. So the Krishna is realized and relished through ecstatic love. So when you come to Bhava Bhakti, in Bhava Bhakti platform, you can begin to experience Krishna. That's ecstatic love. Then, when Krishna is kind, He will be perceivable to our gross eyes. In short, I can tell you that if there is any tangible form of God, then it is Sri Gurudev. So Sri Gurudev is a tangible form of God. And if there is any tangible service to God, then it is the service of Sri Guru. We cannot experience any other tangible service to the Lord than this one. There's no other way we can tangibly serve the Lord than serving Guru. We can see the deity or the picture of Krishna as the Lord Himself, of course, and we can serve the deity with devotion. But it is not an exaggeration to say the tangible experience which is the result of devotionally serving Bhagavan's tangible manifestation of Sri Gurudev, cannot be attained by serving a picture or deity of the Lord. If the natural aim of devotional service is the divine manifestation of both Savior and the Sevaka's bliss, Savior means the object, right? And Sevaka means the sadhaka. So it means, if the natural, in other words, the aim of devotional service is to give bliss and happiness to God and Guru, and experience bliss and happiness ourselves, then such service and devotion cannot be really offered to a deity or a picture of the Lord, but only to Sri Gurudev. The Lord accepts gifts that are offered by the devotee to a picture or a deity of Him by glancing upon it. Right? Like on Krishna's birthday, you bring, on Balaram's birthday, you bring bottles of honey and put them at his feet of the deity, and they open the door, they open the curtains, and they go, oh, and they show the gifts. Here's what they got. In some temples, they say, okay, Janmasmi's coming up. We want all the devotees to buy some gifts, and we'll offer those to the deities at 11 o'clock, and then we'll show the gifts to everyone. I've been in temples like that. So then they hold up, they say, oh, here's a necklace that this person got. This necklace for Radharani, and this person got this, and they offer everything. So he's saying that the Lord accepts gifts that are offered by the devotee to a picture or a deity of Himself by glancing upon it. But Krishna, in His Sri Guru form, accepts the service of the devotee and lovingly relishes the foodstuffs offered to Him with faith, thus becoming really satisfied. When the obedient disciple exclusively serves Sri Gurudev, seeing Him as a tangible manifestation of His beloved deity, then it is not necessary for for him to render devotional service to the Lord separately. Devotional service to the tangible Godhead, Sri Guru, is enough. I think that a really submissive disciple cannot derive so much spiritual satisfaction from serving a picture or a deity of the Lord as he does from serving the tangible Godhead, Sri Guru, by feeding him delicious sweets or offering him nice clothes to wear. Remembering this, there are four places where you can serve the Lord, and through these four gates, Krishna accepts the devotee's service. Well, there are four places where, by which, because he's asking the question, do we experience a potential manifestation, and what is his tangible service like? So there are four places where you can serve the Lord, and through these four gates, Krishna accepts the devotee's service. One is deity service, or service to a picture. That also can be the deity, your picture of Giriraj. Two, Krishna in the form of Sri Guru. Three, Krishna in the form of the blind, the distressed, and the beggars. Four, Krishna in the form of a child. Through the last three gates, Krishna really relishes the loving gifts of the devotee and is thus satisfied. And thus you should know that the real places where the Lord is worshipped are Sri Guru, the guests, and the children. It's interesting how it's being said that these are four places where he can serve the Lord through these four gates. He accepts the devotee's services. So the first one is deity service, but this Acharya is saying that in the form of Guru, the blind, distressed, and the beggars, in the form of child, that the Lord really, you can... The Lord really relishes the loving gifts of devotees when they're given here. So we saw when Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, he would give charity, give money to the beggars, especially older people and distressed people like that. The scriptures say that we must see Sri Guru as God. Sometimes we see that some disciples give the seat of the Lord for the Guru to sit on, or placed on an equal level with God, taking Guru to be God himself. They want to offer puja by placing sandalwood pulp and tulsi leaves on the feet of Sri Gurudev, or already doing that. What is your comment on that? If someone has learned from the scriptures that he should see Sri Guru as God himself, and he places Gurudev on the seat of the Lord, or wants to offer puja to the feet of this Gurudev by offering him tulsi leaves, then he is completely wrong. Disciple is completely wrong. For Sripad Kaviraj Goswami has said in Chaitanya Charitamrita, although my yadyapi amaro guru Chaitanya Radhas, tatapi janiye tino tanhara prakash, although my guru is a servant of Lord Chaitanya, still, I know him to be his manifestation. Therefore, although in principle, Sri Gurudev is the Lord himself, he appears before the devotees in the mood of a servant and a devotee of the Lord in order to teach the conditioned souls. Just like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was God himself. He appeared as a devotee before the devotees. They say, oh, you're God. And he plug up his ears. I'm not God. I'm a servant. The devotee carefully sees Sri Gurudev as the Lord himself. But before the eyes of the general populace, he does not place Sri Gurudev on the Lord's seat, but gives him a seat as the topmost devotee, slightly below the seat of the Lord. He never places his Gurudev on the seat of the Lord, because although he is in principle the Lord himself, in the eyes of the general populace, he is manifest as the Lord's servant and the topmost devotee. The scriptures glorify Tulsi as Govinda Charana Priya. She is Bhakti Devi herself, bestower of devotion. Consequently, the only proper place where Govinda Charana Priya Tulsi, the embodiment of Bhakti Devi, can be placed is on the lotus feet of Govinda. Tulsi should not be offered anywhere else but at the Lord's feet. Sri Gurudev has come to the world in the form of a servant of the Lord, the topmost devotee, to to teach the conditioned souls devotion and to bring them to the lotus feet of the Lord. And the disciple should certainly manifest him to the world as such and worship him on a comparative seat. In his mind, however, the disciple knows that his Gurudev is the Lord himself, for the Lord himself has told Uddhava in Bhagavatam 11:17-27, Acharyam mam vijaniyat navamanyeta karichit namartya buddhisuyeta sarva deva mayo guru. Uddhava, you should know the Acharya to be non-different from me, and you should never slight him or offend him. Do not regard the Acharya as an ordinary mortal being, or ever find any fault in him. For the Guru is the sum total of all the demigods. Question: does Gurudev have any relationship with the spiritual advancement of humankind?
I guess general humanity.
More than enough. It is not exaggerated to say that one cannot make advancement on the spiritual path without accepting a guru. What's more, the spiritual advancement of each and every human being is solely dependent on a bona fide guru. The example that Sri Gurudev sets must also be set by his disciple. Therefore, it is a must in all respects to take shelter of the lotus feet of a bona fide guru in order to make spiritual advancement. Otherwise, it is impossible to enter into the kingdom of devotion and into the life of spirit. Now, what do we mean by a bona fide guru? Everyone will select a bona fide guru according to his nature or character. But a bona fide guru is one who has all human virtues in full. Such a person is not only a bona fide guru, he is qualified to become Jagat Guru. Therefore, a person who wants to attain devotion should select a person who is more elevated than he is, who is learned in the scriptures, and who has firm faith in the scriptures, whose behavior contains all good human virtues, like great affection, compassion, forgiveness, honesty, simplicity, love and devotion, as a bona fide guru, and advance on the path of religion by remaining completely obedient to him. If you can surrender yourself properly to Sri Gurudev, then you should know for sure that he will not play around with your hearts. He will try his best to bring you towards the Lord. As long as one drop of strength remains in his body, he will not cease or hesitate even slightly in bringing you towards the Lord. You should know that Gurudev feels a great deal of responsibility for you. Therefore, a sadhaka bhakta who endeavors to advance on the path of spirit should certainly take shelter of the lotus feet of a bona fide guru who is endowed with a pleasant disposition, who is greatly learned in the scriptures, and who has great faith in them. Of this there is no doubt. Question: naturally, it is seen that saintly and well-behaved people become gurus for the people. Why is the adjective bona fide then still used?
We say guru, then we say bona fide guru.
You have spoken properly. Sri Gurudev is naturally a bona fide guru.
In other words, it's either you're guru, or you're bona fide, or you're not. If you're a guru, you're bona fide.
Do you know why society has begun to use the adjective bona fide?
In other words, in Satyuga there was no such term as bona fide. You must take initiation from a bona fide spiritual master. You find that all throughout Prabhupada's books and Bhagavad Gita and everywhere. You must take initiation from a bona fide spiritual master. So someone who has a little intelligence will say, why does he say bona fide? That means there's unbona fide? There's a bogus one? So in previous ages they would just say take shelter of guru. In fact, even if you look at the scriptures, they don't say, the word bona fide isn't there, it just says one should take shelter of a guru. Prabhupada himself has added that in his translations. Like you say, tadvidhi pranipante, and one should find, you know, so in the purport of that, it doesn't say bona, it just says guru. It says one should take shelter of a guru, and the Puranas and the Bhagavatam says one should surrender to a guru. But now in Kali Yuga there's so much cheating going on, so much bogus rascals, so that when Prabhupada and other people are translating, they say bona fide.
over the last 5,000 years, start using this term.
I think that at a certain time, some people with a low and vile nature have appointed themselves guru, and they have corrupted the human society by giving bogus instructions, thus freely introducing all kinds of irreligious and hideous practices to society. As soon as saintly and harmless people have understood their misbehavior and godlessness, they left them to search out for gurus with elevated characters. It seems that from those days, the term bona fide guru originates. Although people call different persons ideal bona fide gurus according to their own desires, expecting their aspirations to be fulfilled by those particular persons, still, as I told you before, you should know the really bona fide guru to be he who shows the full manifestation of all human virtues, such as truthfulness, simplicity, compassion, forgiveness, devotion, and love. In other words, there are a lot of people that find a Gurudev and they say, yes, my Gurudev is bona fide. He's a bona fide guru and I'm following him. I mean, any path, not just Vaishnava path or any path, yoga or whatever. And they accept him according to their own desires. So they see him as bona fide, but actually isn't bona fide because he's actually full of bad qualities or has actually vile or sinful tendencies. And they expect their aspirations to be fulfilled by those particular persons. They have certain aspirations, certain desires, maybe material desires, and they find some, quote, guru who's actually materialistic and not really very virtuous. He's actually quite impious or even sinful. And it's the cheaters, probably to use the term the cheaters and the cheated. People want to be cheated, so they'll find some guru. They have a cheating mentality. I mean, in other words, they don't really want pure devotional service of the Lord. They want some mixed arrangement, or they want actual sense gratification. So then with that cheating mentality, they find someone who's professing some kind of pseudo-spiritual path or false spiritual path. And when they find such a guru who will actually fulfill their desires for material enjoyment in the name of spiritual life, they say, yes, this is our Gurudev is bona fide. My Gurudev is bona fide. But the really bona fide guru, he manifests all human virtues. I mean, he's completely pure in his behavior and character. You know, he's not a womanizer or a drunkard or intoxicator and so many things. And such as truthfulness, simplicity, compassion, forgiveness, devotion, and love. What is the result of taking or carrying Sri Gurudev's foot dust? The devotional scriptures have said, Vina Mahat Padara Jo Bi Shekham. This is in 5th Canto Bhagavatam, chapter 19, verse 12. This says, 5:19:12, unless and until humankind has itself sprinkled by the foot dust of the great saints, it cannot advance in devotional life. It is also said, Bhaktapada Raja Ara Bhaktapada Jal Bhaktabhukta Avasheshatina Mahabal. That's Chaitanya Charitamrita. The foot dust, the foot water, and the food remnants of a devotee are all very powerful. These three bear great fruits. So you see how valuable Sri Guru's foot dust is to the disciple? One exclusively dedicated disciple had Sri Gurudev's foot dust hanging around his neck in an amulet. One day his Gurudev asked him, Gurudev said, hey Baba, whose amulet is that around your neck? Gurudev, this amulet contains your foot dust. My heart greatly desired that the foot dust of my Gurudev, my beloved Sri Gurudev, would always hang around my neck, thus purifying my body and mind. Hearing these words, his Gurudev said, yes, Baba, you have spoken the truth. There is nothing more sacred than the foot dust of Gurudev. There is no better way for the disciple to protect his allegiance. Allegiance means faith, dedication, surrender, whatever. There is no better way for the disciple to protect his allegiance to his guru and to nourish his guru bhakti than this, or his devotion for guru. The foot dust of the Gurudev always carries the sacred memory of Sri Gurudev and always reminds the disciple of his eternal position of servanthood. Consequently, there can be no opportunity
for any feeling of independence to arise in such a disciple. Sri Gurudev's foot dust is endowed with powers like that of the greatest shield. You know, shield, hold in front of you to protect. Greatest shield or kavacha. And we say Nisringa Kavacha, Narayan Kavacha, that kind of distance in Nisringa Kavacha. Sri Gurudev's foot dust is endowed or is full of powers like that of the greatest kavacha or shield that will protect the disciple and keep him on the path of sadhana. So protect the disciple, protect from what? From maya, from sin. That's one thing, it's not to sin, but also you have to keep your sadhana. You may not be sinning, but may not be doing sadhana. Protect him from sin and keep him on the path of sadhana. The foot dust of Sri Gurudev contains the memory of Sri Guru's association and the topmost fortune of touching his lotus feet, which will keep the disciple's head always bowed to the lotus feet of his beloved Gurudev. You have heard that many people keep the foot dust of 1 lakh of brahmanas in an amulet around the neck. Must be some practice in Bengal, somewhere where there's a huge assembly of brahmanas or something, some mela, maybe Kumbh Mela or something, where there's 20 million, 1 lakh is nothing. Somewhere where a lack of brahmanas get together for some samelam. Sometimes they have these brahman samelams where they do yajnas, and brahmanas from all over different provinces come. Even here they have sometimes melas like that, 1,000 brahmanas or 5,000 brahmanas. So all the brahmanas would come there, and then you would go and collect dust from that place, and that's how you would get it. It's a literal, it's not an exaggeration, it's an actual fact that you would go to this samelam or this gathering of assembly of 100,000 brahmanas and collect dust from there and wear that around your neck. I consider the foot dust of Sri Gurudev to be even more valuable than the foot dust of a lakh of brahmanas. There is nothing more valuable to the disciple than this. Look what great benefit the disciple has by carrying Gurudev's foot dust, and what a great result Sri Gurudev's foot dust grants to nourish the devotee's devotional way of life. Due to its connection with the Gurudev, such foot dust will always awaken a wave of very sacred, affectionate, and honey-sweet feelings in the heart of the obedient and grateful disciple. Those are two glorious qualities that are rare in Kali Yuga. Gratitude and obedience. In Kali Yuga, everyone's independent. There's so many independent movements because no one wants to obey anyone. Children don't want to obey their parents. Students don't want to obey the teachers. Citizens don't want to obey the politicians. No one wants to obey anyone. This is the age of independence, revolution. There's so many revolutions. This revolution, that revolution, black revolution, this women's revolution, men's revolution. There's unlimited revolting movements because everyone wants to disobey and be independent and rebel. There's no obedience. No one wants to submit or be obedient to anyone. Because of harsh experiences in this world, being submissive to someone or being under someone, people get exploited because of so much bad leadership. Politicians are bad, and teachers are bad, and parents are bad. They have child abuse. They have a thing called child abuse. Parents beat up their children. So all these things are unheard of thousands of years ago. So children don't want to obey their parents, and students don't want to obey their teachers because they get beaten or whatever. So no one wants to be obedient. And then the other point, gratitude. People in Kali Yuga, they have very little gratitude. Most people think, I deserve whatever everything belongs to me. Due to intense passion and ignorance, people in Kali Yuga, gratitude is a byproduct of goodness. It's a characteristic of the mode of goodness, to be grateful. So in Kali Yuga, because there's so much passion and ignorance, everyone thinks, the world owes me a favor. I'm the greatest gift to the world. I'm the greatest gift to the world, and everyone should serve me. And I deserve everything I get, and I deserve much more. And everything that comes to me, I deserved it anyway. There's no, just like you hear in the old days, you hear mother and father, they would try to raise their children, would
relatives would come to the children, give some gifts, and the kid would just grab it. All right, and he'd grab it, and then the mother would say thank you. Oh, yeah, thanks. You know, the mother would try to train the children in some principle of gratitude. But generally, the childish mentality, which is, you know, ruled by passion and ignorance, they think, oh, this is for me, something for my sense gratification, great. No idea that this is a gift, this was given to me, I didn't have it before, and I didn't endeavor or do anything to receive this, I didn't buy it, I didn't work for it, it just fell into my hands out of the mercy and kindness of someone beyond me. But that thought can't come because that's an intellectual concept or concept from goodness. Well, in Kali Yuga you find very little gratitude. People just, they'll accept everything. They'll take unlimited services for their own enjoyment and pleasure and receive unlimited gifts from all directions. Their mother and fathers will give them children, lavish them with so much kindness and so much generosity and so much gifts and money and help and guidance and protection and clothes and education and everything. And the children will grow up to be 20 years old and just walk out. And then when the parents get old and sick, they neglect them and stick them in an old age home or a retirement home or leisure village or whatever they call it. They could care less about the parents. No gratitude at all. So this, of course, carries over because we're brought up in this kind of consciousness in Kali Yuga. We're born into this due to our karma.